Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone. And it is great to be back here. I've not been here in person since 2019. I want to thank Teresa in Spain for sending me the invite. I want to thank Diane for all of your help getting settled here, and Dan. And I especially want to thank our dear Les K, the teacher and center of this Sangha for so many decades. Wish that you could be with us this evening, but I do see a square that says Les K, so I am glad that you are there, and I hope that we can visit again in person sometime soon. So, thank you. Many years ago, when I was living at Tassajara, we had a situation where a baby bat was in the shop. And in the middle of the summertime, sometimes we get bats that fly into the shop there. And if you open up the doors, they'll fly back out of the shop. And it's not such a big deal. And so we thought we let the bats out. We closed the shop up for the night. And when we came back in the morning, much to our dismay, there was this baby bat that had been in there all night long. And the baby bat had flown around, of course, trying to get out and find how to exit the shop. It was unsuccessful. And it was lying on top of one of the work tables. And it had gotten its arm somehow or another caught in a piece of discarded duct tape, like that silver sticky duct tape. And we thought, how on earth are we going to help this bat? Because it can't fly. But it's a baby bat. We don't want to put it out of its misery and kill it. We want to see if there's something we can do. So we got a pillowcase and we got it where it quit thrashing around, where we could just get a little tiny bit of its wing exposed, and we flattened it out. You could still see underneath that pillowcase, the bat was in trauma now, you know, going through this thrashing around. And we started to try to hold the wing down and try to just tease the duct tape off of that thin, paper thin baby bat wing. And we got it a little bit off and we noticed that it actually tore part of the wing. We were heartbroken. And the bat wouldn't quit thrashing around now because now it doesn't trust us, you know. And we had to eventually get a solvent and put it on the wing. And the whole time the bat was, you know, now making sounds and squealing and thrashing around. This whole process took about an hour. We finally got the duct tape off. And the bat flew up into the corner of the shop and just stayed there, having this traumatic episode and having a little partial tear in its wing. There's no way on earth that we could have explained to the bat what was going on. It would have been so great if we could have. But it was a trauma beyond the bat's comprehension in regard to what was actually going on. It was outside of its universe. Bats don't usually have to deal with duct tape. They haven't for tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years. Bats have lived without duct tape, but this bat now had to deal with duct tape. an incomprehensible struggle. Have you ever been caught in an incomprehensible struggle? Something that is beyond you. There might be an answer in the universe for it, but even the context of what's going on is very difficult to even grasp. And so we thrash around and we tighten and we feel tense and uptight and worried and nervous and we act out. And that its natural reaction was to act, was to do something, was to exert energy. That's what it did against its trauma. How do we know when to act, when to exert more effort? And when do we know to let back and to relax and to not take any proactive steps? When should we tighten? When should we be loose? When should we act? And when should we pull back and be patient? I call this talk Proactively Patient While Waiting to Act. Tight or loose, do I step forward? Do I step back? In the classic story of John Steinbeck of Mice and Men, there's this character, Lenny. And Lenny is a big, strong person, but he's not terribly bright. And Lenny loves soft things. And he has a mouse. And even before the story starts, there's this prelogue or pre-story that gets alluded to later. But he has this mouse during most of the story that's in his pocket. And he pulls the mouse out and he rubs it and pets it. He loves this mouse and he puts it back in his pocket. And the mouse is dead. And somewhere before the story started, it goes that he was just so loving how soft this mouse was that he petted it and he killed it. He loved it. It was his way of showing affection and his attraction. Have we ever wanted to do so well at something? Have we ever wanted to act and exert effort, either in a relationship or in a personal goal or in our spiritual practice of Zen, where we squeeze the life out of it, where we just ran ourselves and our battery completely down? We exhausted ourselves, like Lenny and his mouse. The definition of karma by its root, as it is defined in the Buddhist practice, is in Sanskrit the word cetana, or I guess in Pali too, cetana, accent over the last A, cetana. And that is volition or intention. And it's cetana action, volitional intentional action, that is karma. And what we do, literally our actions, whether we are holding back and exerting energy, or whether we are doing something intentional, the volitional of body, speech, and mind is the definition of karma. And so we just sat zazen, and when we sit zazen, we are leaving no footprint in the sand. We are doing our best. We had an intention to sit. We had an intention to get on the cushion. We had an intention to take up a posture. And then while we're there, we're doing our best with the mind space and everything that comes up to not leave a footprint. Not one molecule of activity to push something away that we don't like, and not one molecule of activity to give more energy to something that we are fascinated with or want to think about more. so that we can see what comes up from our deep well of karma, the popcorn of our life, what comes up, our body sensations, our mental formations, our desires, our memories, our nose itching, all of that coming forward. And us sitting in the middle, not ignoring it, but being a complete participant in what is coming forward. Without exerting one bit of effort in regard to the mind space. With proper attention to our life, we slowly develop a vision for how to be, honing our gut as to whether to tighten or release, to strive or relax, to act or wait. And this is something that takes a good deal of time. And that is the question in most situations we find ourselves in, is whether or not to act. And in situations sometimes beyond our capability to hold them and handle them like that baby bat, whether maybe thrashing around isn't the answer, or whether maybe we just accept that the answer is beyond us, and that right now we'll just do our best, and to see if we can be calm, if we can center, so that then we can be clear, and we can maybe know what to do next. Now, we tend to, each of us, be one way more than the other on our barometer of how we tend to be. Some people tend to be more not taking action, and some people tend to be more taking action. I tend to be more on the side of the mistakes that I make in life generally tend to be where I took a lot of action where I didn't need to. And there are other folks where the mistake tends to be more on the side of I didn't act and I probably should have exerted more effort. You tend to kind of know where you are in that spectrum. And on the unskillful side of that, tight can be hyper-focused, it can be hyper-ignoring, it can be hyper-boundaries where no boundary is necessary, it can be critical, it can be unforgiving. And loose can be not taking appropriate action, or a lack of good boundaries, or lacking appropriate focus. And then on the plus side, with the skillful side, tight can be responsible, organized, dependable, persevering, diligent, with appropriate boundaries. And loose can be open to others and open to ourselves and spacious and forgiving and using humor and creativity to lighten a heavy weight. Tight can be great and loose can be great. It's honing the gut about when it is appropriate and what this moment is actually calling for, that we start to be able to meet, as we say, the moment, tight or loose, tight or loose. Do I move forward? Do I act? Do I hold back and be more patient and let this unfold? That's the million-dollar question, but it doesn't have an answer. It has answers. Because primarily, that is about, in most cases, flow and learning how something flows. And if you were to go in a boat, let's say it's an old-timey boat, a ship that you have a big wheel, you know, it's maybe like an 18th century wooden ship, and you got all of these sails, and you're going to sail from New York to England, and you have a sea captain that has been sailing for, you know, 40 plus years. And let's say the sea captain has the big steering wheel and you have all the waves and the cross currents and the winds and how that's going. And you're watching the sea captain sail the boat And if you watched all their little tiny decisions, they're going a little bit left and a little bit right, and then holding it still, and then a little bit left and a little bit more left, and then, you know, it's just like, oh, how many different decisions between New York and England, following the feel of the ocean and the wind and what have you. And if you were to sit next to that sea captain and say, why did you go a little bit left there? Now, why did you go a little bit right there? They wouldn't necessarily be able to explain it to you. And even if they did, they wouldn't help you. Because what you're actually watching is somebody in the flow of making decisions, and they are honing their gut for what this moment is calling for. What this moment is calling for. And you can't hone your gut until you start to pay attention to what the moment is calling for. And it's very difficult to know what the moment is calling for until you get clear and calm. So we practice this every day on our cushion. And as opposed to putting our story on top of the thing, the last piece of popcorn that came up into our brain, we just try to notice and then let it go. And if it doesn't go anywhere, then it doesn't go anywhere. But we don't exert any effort because we're just noticing what's actually happening. And we have this construct called Zen, and we have this construct called Zazen. And we have all of these forms, and they are all in support of trying to help individuals learn how to be with this body and this mind in this moment. That is the whole reason for the forms and the whole reason for even having a Zendo. This is the practice place for life, right here. And so this is our practice place. And what is actually coming up in this moment? Can I just see without any of my action, my volitional action layered on top of it? Go away, come forward. No, I'm just right here with what's happening. And we're coming into balance all the time, left or right, as we're living life. And if we're paying attention to what the moments are asking for, if we're paying attention to the person that we're talking to, and maybe it's someone that we're not terribly interested in talking to, maybe they don't bother us, but maybe we have somewhere else to be, or maybe we just would rather not be talking to them. But we're talking to them. Do we pick and choose with people just like we do with our thoughts, or can we take Zazen off the cushion with people and be right there giving that person our full attention and letting them unfurl themselves to us rather than me putting my story on top of them or the story I think that's about them? Constantly coming into the balance of what this is asking for. Do I need to come more forward with this person? Do I need to set a boundary? Do I need to remove a boundary? This is something that if you're analyzing it like that while you're talking to someone, you'll come across very robotic. But if you are flowing with it and letting your attention and awareness come into what's happening, then you're having Zazen with a person. Zazen is sitting Zen. Now you have talking to person Zen. And so I am talking to person Zen. I'm paying attention to what's happening. I'm not putting my stuff on top of that person. I'm letting them come forward to see what the moment is asking for. And that's the practice that is honing our gut. It's like riding a bicycle. Most of us, maybe all of us, I don't know, have ridden a bicycle. And if you think about it, there was a time, and there were many societies in human history that didn't have bicycles. And we've seen bicycles probably all our lives. So it seems pretty normal to learn how to ride a bicycle by age 5 or 6. And then you pretty much know how to adjust going left or right. And what happened? Well, somebody honed a flow. They had a complex series of coordinations and balances, but it can be learned, and it can be learned because they also saw it modeled. And that seems normal. And so not only can we learn how to hone our gut by using all the opportunities, whether it's what is being asked for when I am making my bed in the morning, or what's being asked for when I'm talking to this person at work that I really don't want to talk to, or when it is when I'm sitting Zazen, if we can practice that Zen, that talking to person Zen, that making my bed Zen, that sitting Zen, then I can start to let go of my preferences and I can start to actually learn how to ride the bicycle. And knowing other people and how they ride a bicycle and seeing how they do it, like watching a sea captain, is something that is the teacher in Zen, where we have teachers, we have people, we have examples. But it's not just in the Zen formal tradition. You can find people all over the place that are great teachers that we can notice. And actively noticing people who are good at navigating in the area maybe that I'm not so good at navigating. How to see, who is the sea captain in our life that we could watch? What is the area that I am maybe not as pliant in? There's always lots of bamboo analogies in a lot of the Chinese writings in Zen. And the bamboo is great, you know, it's strong, it's healthy, it grows quickly, but it's also very pliant with the wind, and it bends, but it doesn't break, and it's great. Who has that capacity in the area of life that I'm not so pliant in, that I am just inclined to be a little triggered, I'm inclined to be a little defensive, I'm inclined to be a little petty? Every one of us, certainly including me, are 5 years old in some area of our life that we have not yet reached adulthood in. It's just, you know, we learn how to put on the adulting, where, you know, we look like we're at least 20 in every area, you know, to like the general world out there. But if people knew, like, inside, you know, it's just like, I just want to go into the corner and lie down and cry and kick the floor. You know, that's actually what's going on in here. But I'm adulting, so I'm going to put that on out there. But believe me, that's what's happening with adults. One of the best things about being a practice leader and meeting with people day after day after day is you get to start feeling pretty normal. You're like, oh, yeah. Everybody has something inside that is not entirely as grown up as they would like it to be. And the only perfect people are the ones you see at a great distance. But see anybody up close, and they're a human being that has many different buildings in their cityscape, and some of them aren't very tall. And finding individuals that are our teachers, our modelers, is just brilliant. Because the inclination in the human spirit is to try to find autopilot, to try to find, how should I be? Tell me how to be so that I can be, and then I'll never have to worry about suffering again, or I'll never have to worry about whatever again. I'll never have to be intimidated again. I'll never have to have a bad boundary again. I'll never have to go in with anxiety to a meeting again. I'll have it nailed, and then I can just go on autopilot. And that's what kind of we want. And human beings aren't built that way. Human beings are built where we have cycles and ups and downs, and we're organic, and we are not a static thing. And knowing how other people surf and ride the waves can be a great teacher. And when we see it modeled, maybe we didn't have it modeled in our family, and maybe even in our neighborhood, that just not, it's like everybody was just not so good at X. And then you go find like people from another place or a different family or whatever, you're just like, wow. It's one of the benefits, I think, of traveling is like you get to go and see other cultures, and you're just like, these people struggle with this thing, but where I come from, we don't struggle with it at all. But they've got this other thing nailed, and like nobody where I come from has this nailed. You're like, it's just like riding a bicycle. And it's like, oh, I've seen people ride bicycles. If you were to go back to Mongolia in the 11th century, where they didn't have bicycles, it might be kind of, you know, unique, novel. You might be a chief of something if you could create a bicycle and ride it around, you know? But what is it to be able to be in a problem that is bigger than us that we don't know how to deal with, and we aren't even sure what the boundaries are. We don't know what way is up. We're like the baby bat. But we've seen somebody model this before, tight or loose. We didn't ask them whether to be tight or loose. We saw them flow with it. We saw how they were with it. We saw the wind of that house, as they call it. What is the wind of that house? What is the nature of that? What is the tone that is set? What is the zeitgeist of that way of being, the spirit of those, you know, people? How can I hone those things? It's by taking the opportunity of trying to use, well, that's what Zen was created for us to have these forms to support us learning how to be with what's going on and to drop our stories and our fears and our illusions about everything, our internal gossip so that we feel good about stuff and to just drop it. And then to be with what's going on. And then to actually engage ourselves with a teacher who can model some of the stuff about navigating the stickiness and weirdness and pettiness and anxiousness of life. If not the huge traumas where it's bigger than us and all we want to do is thrash around. I was one time introduced to a teacher that I didn't expect. And I don't even remember her name. I would like to look her up. She was a senior project manager at Sony Entertainment in Los Angeles. And I was in Sausalito taking a voice acting class. And she was teaching us all weekend in voice acting. And it was voice acting for cartoons and video games. And she was a chief project manager for the major games of Sony Entertainment with their PlayStation. And you have these creative types that are writing stories and narratives, and then you have these other creative types that are doing graphics and video and all of that sort of thing. And you have your back-end hardcore programmers. And so she had to work with that and the voice actors, of course, and she had to get a finished product. And all these people, usually people that were smart people and talented people, which usually they want to come forward and have their idea going forward. And how do you coalesce like a room of like 30 or 40 of those people and figure out what to do next and how we're going to do it and how to use, you know, your idea, but not your idea. And then, you know, anyway, all I can say is that if I could ever facilitate a meeting the way that she facilitated our class of 20 people, and we weren't even like trying to build a video game, but she just did it effortlessly. It was just like when she said something, I didn't take it personal. I knew that we weren't going with my idea, we were going with her idea or with his idea, and we were gonna do it this way. And then if I didn't do it right, I had to do it over again. But there was just something where there was just ego stripped out of it. I didn't feel anything toward her like you didn't like my idea, or you didn't let me take the lead part, or you didn't, you know, I didn't feel any of that. How did she do that? I don't know. But I wanted to spend all weekend and then the next weekend with her, and I wasn't even studying voice acting by the end of it. I was just like, how is this person managing people? How are they facilitating a group, a teacher? These are things that we model for each other, and the lessons are all around us. And sometimes it's this slow kind of, as we call it, walking in the mist, where we understand by being with a certain way of doing things and being open to our own lens and our own narrative. And when I say being open to our own lens, I want to unpack that one level further, because sometimes, and this dawned on me like, I don't know, 6 months ago, I was walking down a hallway at Zen Center. Nothing was bothering me. I wasn't hungry. I wasn't thirsty. I wasn't anticipating anything. I was just walking down a hallway and I was like, right now I am totally unencumbered and I still have a lens. I was like, I still have a lens. There is no time I do not have a lens. I am filtering the universe. There is not a neutral time in my life where I come back to neutrality. I am always viewing the planet through a lens. And that lens is put on top of everything that I see, like a prism refracting light, putting the unique spectrum out on the other side of a prism. Same light, different prism, unique spectrum. Unique stories, unique fears, unique ideas about the universe, unique ways of seeing person X, and then my friend sees person X and says, that's not the person. And I say, yes, it is. No, it's not. Different lens. Can I become aware of my lens as we're sitting? The stuff that I want to push away, that's a teacher. The stuff I want to hold on to and daydream about, that's a teacher. And can I be gracious and open and thankful for those teachers? Arms open. The stance of a host. The internal voice of Avalokiteshvara. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, the very beginning of the Heart Sutra. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, when deeply practicing Prajnaparamita, the perfection of wisdom, deeply saw that the five aggregates were empty and thus relieved all suffering. Avalokiteshvara is the icon, the symbolism, the deity, if you will, in mythology of male or female, different times, compassion. The most chanted, probably, sutra in Buddhism, the Heart Sutra, starts off with compassion. And that's the context. The context that we hold it in. And then what do we do with that? Well, we practice Prajnaparamita, the perfection of wisdom. Perfection of wisdom. Compassion and wisdom have to rise up together. Wisdom rise up without compassion, you have a very wise and knowledgeable person that does a lot of harm and hurts people. You have a compassionate person without a lot of wisdom or developing that side of things. You can have someone who is very accepting and also has very poor boundaries. Compassion and wisdom rise up together right in the beginning of the Heart Sutra. And so we're sitting with that openness, with that spaciousness for whatever comes up, like a host, like Avalokiteshvara, the host, with what's coming up, spacious with what's coming up. No judgment. Nothing that comes up in Zazen is good or bad. It's what's coming up. There is not a bad period of Zazen. There's just a, was I with Zazen or was I not with Zazen? Be aware that you're aware when you're aware. You're right there and you're with it. That's what's happening. Then you become aware that you're not aware and you're thinking about something else. Then all you do is come back and now you're aware. Because you're spacious. Avalokiteshvara, the context with which we engage our practice. There is no moment, there's just a turning toward. Moments are illusions. Because a moment would be a fixed property. There is a flow of the universe, and there is turning toward what's happening now. And sometimes it's eureka. Sometimes it's walking in the mist. Sometimes it's traveling with the old sea captain. Sometimes it's trying to be with what's going on. And other times, things dawn on you. And Zen really celebrates the eureka moments. And sometimes that's what gets celebrated in the stories that gets told about, you know, someone says thus and such, and then someone says, you know, but what about the cat? And then somebody hits someone and then they, you know, wake up, you know. There's all these stories about, you know, this exact place and time when something happened. The eureka moments. We have little eureka moments, eureka being, you know, the aha that Archimedes the Greek philosopher and mathematician, when he discovered volume, or at least the how to describe the displacement of objects in water and how to what that formula would be. And he famously jumped up out of his bath and was yelling, "Eureka, I found it!" You know. And so there's also those other moments that happen. The spark of all of the germination of honing our gut, and then all of a sudden you're in the conversation with someone and you just kind of know a little bit better about how to navigate. Maybe you realize I should leave this conversation. Maybe you realize I'm really not being open. I need to just have a more open stance. Or maybe you realize, wow, I've got a total story on top of this person and I need to let them unfurl and show themselves to me. Or maybe I don't need to be afraid, but all I feel like is like pushing you away. Those little awarenesses start to creep in, like a knot that you can't untie, like a knot if you've ever been in like the frigid cold on your boots and the knot gets frozen and you can't get your boot off and you try and try and your fingers get really, really sore and tired and cold. And then you get that little tiny feeling where the knot just gives away a little bit of motion. And you're like, oh, yes, yes, this is gonna move. This is gonna move. Those things can happen too. But here's the thing, they get celebrated in Zen to the point that in many times, that's what we're thinking is growth, is how many aha moments did I have? Or, you know, did I have a thing dawn on me in the last month or the last year in Zazen or what have you? And those are byproducts of practice, but they are not goals. And we're just being with the moment, being with the thing that's happening next. And anything that happens as a byproduct of practice is something that we're grateful for. But we let it unfurl and let it show what it is, because we can't create a spiritual path for our life with the mind that created the life we currently have, because then it would be limited. So we're engaging in something much bigger than our mind, bigger than us. And we're trying to figure out how to navigate the little pieces of it here and there, forward and backward, by honing our gut. We take inventory of our life, not during Zazen, but here and there in our Zen practice, about where am I spacious and where am I not? In aggregate, what's working and what's not working? Who am I inclined to be open to and who am I inclined not to be open to? Who deserves my attention, who doesn't? And an inventory of my internal dialogue. And what is that tone? What is the spirit? What is the wind of that house? Could I raise a child from age 0 to age 5 with my internal voice? Would that be a healthy human? Would that be like Avalokiteshvara? Would that be the context for something healthy? Or would it be something else? We want to act not out of fear, or else our vision will be distorted. And we want to be able to have an open arm stance to all of our shortcomings. Because chances are you didn't create a project plan for any of your shortcomings. One day I will be not so good at this. I will be petty or anxious or fearful in this way, and here's a project plan for it. No, you come by these things honestly through just being a human being. This is your koan to figure out. This is your burden to figure out. This is my burden to figure out. and to be with it? And can I hold it spaciously? Can I be with that? Like a host. Nimble. Able to adjust. Pliant like bamboo. Not knocked over, not boundaryless, but pliant. Able to roll with the wind and the breeze that's going on today. Nimble, able to move, to have that fine dexterity of movement that can adjust to this weather vane, the wind blowing this way, the wind blowing that way. And to really be with that next person that we come across and what it is that they might be teaching us or how they're coming forward. Every moment of life is our life, and every moment of life is an opportunity to learn. And sometimes things are bigger than us, and then that's okay. We just know, I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer for this one, and this is really painful. What can I do next that would help me center and calm, help me center and calm down so that I can see just my next step in front of me? Like that clear lake that has a storm on it, and then when the storm quits a little bit, all of a sudden the ripples kind of, and then all of a sudden you can start to see a reflection, and then the reflection, the more calm it gets, you start to see really clearly. Tight or loose. We just watch how they're doing it. It's the spirit in which things are engaged. I knew someone one time who grew up in Montana with cowboys. And she said, I learned how to, when you have cows and you're a cowboy, you have fences and you need to mend the fences, and the cows will brush up against them and fence posts will lean and barbed wire will break, and you need to go and mend the fences, and you need to put the posts in deeper, and you need to run new wire. And she said, I learned how to mend a fence, to build a fence, and to take care of a fence from an old cowboy, and I would spend every summer out walking the fences with him. And all day long, we maybe would say two sentences. Cowboys are not known for a lot of words. And the learning was in how. You know, if you make that barbed wire too tight, it might even hurt the cows. You needed to have a little bit pliant so they'll brush up against it and then realize, oh yeah, okay, that's a boundary. You can't have it so loose that, you know, you get knocked over. And you need to know where to put the fences. And you need to look at where they're grazing. And sometimes you need to move the fence posts. And the whole way and manner of being with the cows and having those fence posts was something that was taught without words. It was just the manner and the spirit of being with the moment. A cowboy mending a fence is a very Zen activity, if you wanted to use it as a verb. And it would be being with that thing and only that thing. Not mending a fence and listening to a podcast. Not mending a fence and looking at my texts. Just giving my whole attention to the fence and mending that fence. Because one day there will be something that comes down the path for every human being that's bigger than us. And if it is bigger than us, and if it is unexplainable to us, we want to have honed how to be, how to calm down, how to be with. Otherwise, we'll be like that baby bat. More and more traumatized, more and more confused, more and more anxious, more and more stirred up, because we're afraid. We don't have any comprehension of what's happening, and we don't know how to act, and we don't know whether to thrash around more or just completely play dead. This Zendo is our practice space for life, and we are here learning how to sail our ships and how to hone being a person with this body and this mind in this moment. We do our best to feel the waves and to feel the wind and to be open to the journey so that we might love it. Being open to the journey so that we might love it. You can't facilitate a room of individuals with a lot of egos and be accepting and successful with them unless you can drop all your stories about them. Unless you can just be with what they're bringing forward. That's what I learned from her. She was dropping all of the stories about us and was just coming across as dealing with what we were offering. There just didn't seem to be any subtext to me when she was viewing me. There was just what I was bringing forward. And can I be open to the journey so that I might love it? So that I might connect to that heart that is in the next person that I interact with, rather than skip over them because I wasn't terribly wanting to have a conversation with them, but to connect to their humanity and what they're offering. Wisdom and compassion rise up together. The spirit of Avalokiteshvara in embracing every moment. And to know that our vision will slowly emerge and our gut will slowly be honed if we are able to be with the moments. And we use this training place in this construct, this human construct, to practice being a human being. And we use it to hone what it is to be with the next moment and to just let it unfurl itself as a practice for our life, holding it spaciously and totally accepting whatever it is and whatever it shows us. And then the next moment. So, let me see here. Let's, if anyone has any questions, and also I'll go here on the chat and see if I can reveal that to see. There we are. So, okay. So we'll just open it up for any questions or comments. Looks like you're closing a door. What's that?
People on Zoom might.
Oh yeah, I'm looking here on Zoom with the chat, and I have that. Thank you, though. So, yeah, Dan.
Yes. So I think of freedom quite a bit, and the filter analogy is something that I think about a lot too. And it's taken me years, but I've come to think that that filter concept is a problem for me, because I compare it, I think I can't have that and have freedom at the same time. And I've realized that it's my obsession with the filter is the problem. The filter doesn't go away.
Right.
It's my obsession with it,
yeah,
that makes me feel claustrophobic and anxious and lacking in freedom.
Yeah.
So, and that's just a thought, but it's something that you said, that filter, I struggle with that one.
Yeah.
Many times it's not very clear. You know, that obsession and that anxiety comes up around that.
Right.
And yet, I've never lived without that filter.
Right. Yeah. And so I don't know if everyone could hear online, but I'll just kind of paraphrase again. But the comment was around freedom as a concept and wanting freedom and also having a filter and the frustration of and the realization of the problem is that I have a frustration with the fact that I have a filter. And can I be free and have a filter. And the filter isn't the reason that I'm not free. It's the fact that I'm unhappy with the fact that I have a filter. And that's the lack of freedom. Am I paraphrasing?
Yeah, correct? Great. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that the no one chooses to have a lens, a filter to place on the universe. You just have one. And, you know, those little moments where we feel like we maybe pierced through and for a blip didn't have a filter, you're just like, yes. But, I mean, we're pretty much, that's how we live our lives, is with our filter on things. And we learn to get more in touch with what it is. And the more we get in touch with what it is, then we get some clues as to maybe why we have it, and what we're afraid of, and what we're looking out for, you know. And our filter is our teacher, you know. But the acceptance of the filter is freedom. It's not the destruction of the filter.
Thank you
very much. Thank you very much. Yes, back here.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Yeah.
For this future, you mentioned that lady, which is such a great facilitator.
Right.
And she draw all the story about Luca. And then when he draw the story, is not future. She has a future. But she doesn't come up with the story, right? Can you comment about from future to story, you know, the subtle closeness?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great point to spotlight. So the comment and question was about the story that I was telling about the woman who was the senior project manager at Sony, and how it appeared that when she was dealing with us, one of the key ways that it appeared that was making her such a great facilitator was that it seemed like she was dropping all of her stories about us. And but then saying, but if we always have a filter, then of course she still had a filter, but how is she able to drop the stories about us and still have a filter, you know? Sometimes analogies appear more black and white than they are, but I think that in reality, it was just maybe the degree to which she was able to drop the focus on any attraction or aversion to us as people, and was able to hone in on what we were actually offering and unfurling to her. I am sure that she had a filter. And I'm sure that she was viewing us through her filter. But she had, whatever, wherever she grew up or whoever she was around, or maybe she just took a whole bunch of, you know, leadership development classes, I don't know. But it appeared very naturally honed. And the way in which she interacted with each person pretty much seemed to be the same. And she pretty much seemed to be accepting of each person that she engaged with. But to say that that means that she didn't have a filter, I would not go that far, because I totally believe that she had a filter. It's just that in the area of being able to meet that person and really you put her focus on what they're offering, that seemed to be something that she had much better than most people I've ever met, was just the ability to focus on what this person is offering, rather than, do I like this person? Or do I think this person is smart? Or do I think this person is creative? Or do I think this person has talked too much? Or do I think this person is trying to do some sort of ego thing? Or the millions of stories that you could have just as little blips if you're trying to facilitate a conversation. You could have all these little blips about people going off. And she seemed to be able to like part those waves and go right into what that person is offering. But I think, in fact, I'm quite certain that she had a lens that she was viewing all of us through, that was her own distorted funhouse mirror of life. Thank you. That's a great point. That's a great point. Yes, yes, please, Diane. I don't see any hands right now. Yes.
This is very illustrative of me trying to manage and control.
No, it's very helpful.
I'm very much identifying with your bat, with the duct tape, all around. But I put my own duct tape around me. And I'm usually very controlled and very much wanting to manage things. And you said automatic pilot at one point, like that was not a good thing. But I wonder if we find that balance in our practice and in our sitting, then we don't have to manage and control quite so much, because we're coming almost automatically, intuitively, expressing our true self.
Yeah.
So I just have this thing about letting go of all of that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it causes me to be totally paralyzed.
Yeah.
I was at a funeral the other day, and various people got up and said things about the person who had died. And I really cared for this person, and I had things I wanted to say, but I didn't get up and say anything. And I realized, it was about me, my own ego. How would I come across? How would I appear? And that's usually what is getting in my way.
Yeah.
About that sort of thing.
So yeah.
I've been sitting for a long time, but it seems like the story continues.
Yeah. Just to paraphrase for folks there, so she's talking about like the analogy I used, using the term automatic pilot, and saying that, you know, that's not the goal. But then talking about how that sometimes it can be exhausting with, like, you just want to let go and you want things to flow and you want to be in like the zone of this is actually connecting and what have you. And again, just like the previous comment, I'm glad you spotlighted this, because this is another thing to tease out a little bit. So automatic pilot would be different than flow. It's the word automatic. That there isn't anything automatic that is like an autopilot. It will just go from one coast to the other, and there's no being in harmony with something that has to be paid attention to, like a surfer on a wave. Now, a surfer on a wave doesn't want to be thinking about left or right, forward or backward, overthinking. That'd wear you out. Be like being at a funeral and like overthinking something, and you're like, no, I want to flow. A surfer on a wave, you know, just wants to be in harmony with that wave and just surf and just go. But that's not automatic pilot. Automatic pilot would be, I could go to sleep right now and the plane would still fly to Los Angeles, you know. It's like, I want to stop paying attention to the wave. You know, as soon as the surfer stops paying attention to the wave, as soon as the juggler stops paying attention to the balls, they fall. But you're in the flow. But a juggling and being in the flow and surfing and being with the wave is not automatic pilot. And that's what you're talking about, is you're talking about wanting to be in the flow of something where it's just, it's coming forth, you know. But the word automatic, I think, is the thing that's like the skip in the record, because it does feel automatic, you know, it does, you know, but what you're talking about is organically being in the flow of something that you've honed. And that is really what you're looking for. But you don't want to fly to LA with your eyes closed. Thank you for that. Okay. So we are a little bit past, and now is the closing chant.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org, that's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.